president, but I don't know anyone who voted for him.
Chris Butler, you've recorded the music on your new CD on vintage equipment, things like wax cylinders and wire recorders and lathes that make 45 RPMs. And really, there's only one question, although I plan to ask a lot more. Why?
Insanity, I guess. Basically, it happened by a fluke. I found a wire machine in a flea market for $25, and I'm a songwriter. And when you get an idea for a song, you just bung it down somewhere, and everything in the house was broken, or in the shop, except this wire machine, and I wasn't even sure if it worked. Set up a mic, played my tune, and what came out was instant old.
Well, I told him you can't run this thing, I'm just dazzled.
Chris Butler hasn't always been a Luddite. He produced perfectly hi-fi hits with his group The Waitresses in the 1980s. You may know his tunes I Know What Boys Like and Christmas Rapping. Also on his resume, a Guinness record for the world's longest pop song, 500 verses, clocking in at 69 minutes. His latest escape is The Museum of Me, a CD on Butler's Future Fossil label. It comes out Tuesday. Chris Butler says that his foray into vintage tech has consumed him.
People found out that, hey, you're using this old gear. I've got another wire machine. I can't get any sound out of it. Do you want it? Someone else will say, hey, there's a four-track Studer Beatles-era four-track machine at this other studio. And all of a sudden, I'm collecting this equipment, or it's collecting me, more accurately.
I'm so curious about the idea of the wire recording, since that was the impetus for this. If this is something that's 50 years old, I mean, what kind of working order is it in?
Yeah, if you're lucky enough to get one take out of the thing before it blows up, that's a great day. And then you have to scramble around to try and find someone who would be interested in fixing this. And soon you're in this network of referrals through referrals, and then you start scrambling for parts. Thank you, eBay, and which is saving my rear end on a couple occasions. Another amazing thing about, you don't just get a piece of gear, you get an entire support system, and you meet an enormous amount of cranky people who are hobbyists for each individual machine here.
A Hole in the Sky, performed by Chris Butler.
From a hole in the sky came a horrible sound.
Wire and wax are two very early techniques.
Yes.
Now, if wire makes it sound old one way, does wax make it sound old in a different way? The example being, of course, the very first tune on the CD is called A Hole in the Sky, and you recorded that on wax. Is the old sound different between wax and wire?
Completely different. This CD is as much of a collection of different types of noise as it is actual music. The wire machine has a prickly, metallic, stuttering sound that kind of overlays everything. The acoustic Edison wax sound is a very narrow frequency range, kind of telephony. If you did the same tune on two different types of media, it would have, I think, a completely different effect. It kind of gets into sound design. You try and match the tune to the right piece of gear.
One, two, yahoo! The sign says here. Gee, what a relief.
The Idiot Trail, for example, you've got some violins on it.
Yes.
And you said that when you record violins digitally, they it doesn't sound the way that you want it to, but when you record it on vintage tape, on analog tape, you get that warm sound. So that would be an example of what you're talking about in terms of your matchups.
Exactly. Plus, I got a chance to work with the Rolling Stones mobile unit.
Now,
which is,
would you explain, what is that?
Okay. It's, to my knowledge, the first actual mobile recording studio conceived by and built for the Rolling Stones in the late 60s. And at that time, they had become either addled or just stinking rich and couldn't be bothered to leave the house, so they decided to bring the studio to their various mansions. They constructed this truck with a complete recording studio, and they basically would drive the truck up to the back door, run in their cables, and record in their houses. The truck had quite a pedigree. Who's Next was recorded with it. Exile on Main Street, Machine Head, Led Zeppelin too. So the biggest piece of vintage gear I could find.
And all the stuff worked?
All the stuff worked. It had an aroma. We jokingly referred to it as the men's locker room of the good ship Rastafari. It was a little gamey, Leanne, but everything worked just great. Song on there called Painted Rain that's basically just a bonehead dumb rock song that has a lot of low end on it, and this particular truck just is the best for capturing big thuddy drums and bass.
Just follow my finger, go where the beat goes. Let's pop a cheetah, shag on some jazz bones.
Did the machinery that you were working on affect the way that you performed? I mean, did it make a difference? Did it make you play differently?
Absolutely. Instantly you learn that technology shapes the performance versus the other way around. You know, you come into an acoustic Edison recording session, you know, and you're trying to be all nuanced in your singing and full, you know, rock blast voice, and the engineer goes, can't do that. You have to sing very modulated, easy tones. Nothing's too loud, too soft. And suddenly you're starting to sound like Rudy Valley because that's what the machine likes. Those are the frequencies that it likes. So you have to really be careful what you put into it. And suddenly your performance is much more controlled, altered, targeted, and you don't necessarily come out sounding like Bing Crosby, but you understand that his sound was shaped by the gear of the day as much as just his innate talent.
As long as the wind's blowing, I'm okay. I've got power. Enough to run the TV for a couple hours. Well, it's either the TV or the PC or heat or light.
One of the toys you're using on this song, Power, was it a portable 8-track?
Cassette? Actually, a 4-track.
A 4-track, right. 4-track cassette. Now, this kind of places it in the 80s. You know, you got the synths in,
that's
in
right.
there. Was this the machine that sort of, I don't know, that lodestone that gave musicians power?
Absolutely. Up until this machine came out, Tascam 244 Porta Studio, bless its little recording head, you had to pay a fortune to go into a studio to make even the flimsiest, least thought-out demo. This machine was a complete little recording studio in a box. You could put drums on one track and a guitar on the other, keyboard and a voice or whatever, and use it as a sketch pad. This is the same machine that Bruce Springsteen used to record Nebraska, Pete Townsend's demos. It's easy to use, it sounds good, and it's pretty bulletproof. Great machine.
As long as the wind's blowing, I'm okay. I've got power. I mean, I've got my life down to one plug now. Can you say that?
The crazy thing about this technology is that it still works. And, I mean, I am not a Luddite. You can't do these projects without, you know, going digital and fixing everything in Pro Tools or some kind of manipulation software. But this machinery is supposed to be at the bottom of a landfill by now, but it was really well built and it still works. And it has a really unique sound to it. And I've been having a great time using it and tailoring some kind of song to it, and not so good a time trying to keep it working, but it's been a really fun project, and I don't think I'm going to do it again, though. My repair bills are extraordinary.
Chris Butler, his CD, The Museum of Me, is on Future Fossil Records. And for more on Chris Butler, including pictures of the machines used in the recording, you can visit our website at npr.org. Chris joined us from our New York bureau. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.